Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich, and we are the authors of Junie B. Jones, the musical, and you're listening to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By, the only Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, my friends, shalom, theater lovers, and Dave's Gone By listeners. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And you know that I love the theater, and you know I love show tunes and theater music. I even like family and children's theater sometimes, when it's clever and smart and good. And that kind of show is written by our two, count them, two guests in the neighborhood on this fine Shabbos morning. We have with us Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich. Now, between them, they've won MAC Awards, four of them, a Bistro Award. Heisler won a Claiborne Award for her lyric writing. They had the show Dear Edwina off-Broadway. They also had Junie B. Jones, which you can hear on the cast album that is just coming out on January 13th. But here we have them in the neighborhood. Shalom to Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich. Hello.
Oh, Rabbi Saul.
Yes, that would be me. How are you?
We're great today. Thank you for having us on.
Now, let me ask the most important question before anything else. Are you both, or may I say each, Jewish?
We are. You're both.
Jewesses. A duet of Jewesses. I'm very happy. So, before anything else, how Jewish are you? Were you both raised conservadox, middle-dox, no-dox, papadox? How were you raised?
Oh, my goodness. I was a proud member of Temple Om Shalom, a Reformed temple in Chicago, Illinois. This is Zena speaking, by the way. I was raised to the left of Reform, not really religious, but I'm a proud member of Park Avenue Synagogue in New York City.
Oh, Mit Mazel, do you keep either of you any of the, do you do Seders on Passover? Do you do Yom Kippur? What do you do? Do you do anything at all? Do you have guilt? Do you feel guilt about things?
Always.
Now we're
Jewish. But we wrote the bar mitzvah thing that they did at your temple.
Yes, we've written a number of
liturgical music pieces for Park Avenue Synagogue, and Cantor Ozzy Schwartz is doing some wonderful musical things there. So Marcy and I did something that they do for the bar mitzvahs. We did like a Misha Berach. We did, I've done, a L'dor V'dor, Nesim Shalom, and you know, so I'm keeping it real.
have you ever done any Bris songs?
Oh, you know, you never, you know, that's always, any happy occasion, we are always happy to celebrate.
Well, you should do Bris songs, because you know what? When you do those, you make good tips. But anyway,
there's my symbol, I need a crown.
There you go. But we're talking, first of all, tell us about the CD that's just coming out on January 13th. It's the cast album of Junie B. Jones. And it's a little confusing because you have two different Junie B. Jones' musicals. So somebody tell me what the hell's going on.
Junie B. Jones series of books.
Wait, who's talking, by the way? You do sound a bit alike, so you have to kind of identify who's who.
Okay, this is Marcy.
Hello, Marcy.
Although, I don't know if that will help you in this situation. The Junie B. Jones series of books.
Yes.
Written by Barbara Park, who is a wonderful, wonderful children's author. And there are, over 80 books in the series, I believe. And so we took four or five of them, and we adapted a musical, Junie B. Jones, the musical, out of four or five episodes in Junie B.'s life. The book series covers Junie's adventures in kindergarten and first grade,
uh-huh.
All that she learned along the way. And we were so lucky to have the show tour around the country by TheaterWorks USA.
And
I believe it went to Colorado and Long Island a few different times.
Very good.
And now we have this wonderful group of Nashville studio singers who have taken the musical and captured it and can bring it all to you to download.
Download and also, well, it's a CD as well. You can get it on Amazon and the usual places or not.
Yes, you can get it on iTunes, probably Amazon as well. I think you can stream it on Spotify and all those good places.
Now, you two met a while ago. You've been working together for more than two decades. And did you meet doing musical theater?
Yes, we met when we were three. We were both in a musical theater writing workshop, and we weren't in it at the same time, but I had come back to visit, and a good friend of ours had introduced us, and we just kind of hit it off immediately. And we were friends for about a year, and then we started writing together. And once we wrote our first song, it was kismet.
What was your first song that you wrote together?
Our first song that we wrote together was actually for another children's project we did called Dear Edwina, and it was about the importance of RSVPing to birthday parties. It was called RSVP.
Okay.
There you go.
Good. And actually, Dear Edwina wasn't, it was off Broadway not that many years ago. But that was the first piece that you collaborated on?
Yeah, we had written it a long time ago. The first off-Broadway production was done in 08, I think.
Right, but that was the first musical we worked on.
Yeah. Right, and we had written it in the late 90s, and then MTI licensed it. So it actually was a bit of a backwards, a backwards way to do a musical. It had toured first, and then ended up off-Broadway. So it was sort of the direct-to-DVD approach to musical theater.
All right. Hey, any way to get your stuff on, whatever works at this point.
Exactly. But it was a wonderful, it's a little bit of an episodic thing. It's about a little girl who gives advice out of her garage in Paw Paw, Michigan. So, you know, everybody needs a little good advice. So, we had all these wonderful relatives who gave us good advice, so we had to go.
Oh, so for example, what's advice that a relative gave you guys, and also what's advice that you got from taking the musical theater workshops that you did, or from other colleagues in the field?
About being yourself, and there's a song called Sing Your Own Song at the very end, and I think that's fairly good advice, at least I think so, that just don't let other people take away that special thing that makes you you, essentially. I also think that when you are writing, when you have a musical theater workshop, there's such feeling to write like other people. You know, we all influence each other. And I do think that when you are writing musicals or telling your own stories, that you have your own style, your own way of doing it, and things have to come from your own heart. And I do think that that shows up a lot in my work with Zena. It's very important to be able to sing your own song and do things in your own way. And I think that's how you really make the truest friendships, when you offer what you really have in your heart.
Well, let me ask, you can always tell on some level a Stephen Sondheim musical versus a Jerry Herman musical versus a William Finn kind of musical. Are there markers in the musicals that you guys do that you could point to and tell, up is a Heisler Goldrich musical?
I hope so. I think one of the things that we try to do, I would say that we sound kind of semi-traditional in our style, but we have like a modern quirk to it. I'm not sure if other people are doing what we're doing, sort of. I tend to be a little bit wordy, and I sometimes have some crookedly specific way of saying things. I'm going to have to think of an example.
Please, yes.
I'm gonna let Zita talk while I think of an example.
Oh, I have nothing to say. Wait.
I enjoy wordplay. We look for very specifics in names and, Kalamazoo and Paw Paw, Michigan, and we have a character named the Queen of Bula Bula, and we sort of, each character has their own way of speaking, and I think that I always look for something wacky to name, wacky names, etc., and I think we always have a slightly quirky approach.
But I think melody is very important to us as well, and so we try to do songs that have some, hopefully some weight to them, so that you can remember them after you've heard them, hopefully. We'll see.
And did you come up with a lyric, a weird, twisted, crooked sort of lyric-y thing yet?
I call it the crooked specific. Let's see. What are some of my crooked specifics, Zena?
I'm putting you on the spot.
There's a thing about, there's a song called Franken Guest. Oh, right. That's about a bad party guest called Franken Guest, and it's a little takeoff on Frankenstein.
And it has all these things that that's the other song. So what's the thing that makes him so offensive? Isn't that je ne sais quoi? And then she says, that means I don't know. Is it because the moon's so big? Was he born a total pig? I don't know. That's
greeting there.
That's cute. I like that. By the way, we're talking with Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich, who are the authors of such musicals as Dear Edwina and Junie B. Jones, the musicals, and also a show called Ever After that played at the, was it Paper Mill or Goodspeed that they did that?
Paper Mill. We did Paper Mill Playhouse was Ever After, and we did The Great American Mousicle at Goodspeed with Julie Andrews.
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about Ever After, because that one, I assume, is like Cinderella after the stuff happens?
Well, it's based on the movie that was done in 1998. Drew Barrymore starred in it, and it's a realistic telling of Cinderella. So it is basically the Cinderella chain of events as we know them. But posing the question, what if Cinderella happened in real life?
Oh, well, she'd be driving an Uber cab, probably. Something like that. I don't know. But let me ask you, though. So there was talk a few years ago, before that show was done, that was kind of eyed for Broadway. And then it played out of town, and the reviews were okay. I think, did Charles Isherwood kill the momentum on that?
I don't think so. I think we just have more work to do, which is quite often the case with new musicals.
Right.
So we have a little more work to do, and we are talking right now about where we're going to go next, hopefully before Broadway.
Ooh, okay. I mean, because that's the thing. That's when I, you know, you guys have been toiling in the musical theater field now since, as you said, 1992, 1993. And you don't do just children's musical. That's been your bread and butter. You've had, thank God, TheaterWorks USA. One of you, I forget which, does a lot of stuff for Disney. Am I right? So, but you also you're grown-ups, and you write grown-up musicals, too. It's just, do you feel like sometimes you've just been banging your head on a door that will not open?
I think that banging your head on the door is absolutely part of it, and I think no matter who you talk to, even the most famous of colleagues and mentors, I think banging your head on the door is part of it. I think whenever you're working in the arts, it's never a given, and I think things can always go one way or the other. The key is building a life that involves music and making music, and the fact that we've been able to do that and have a career that has been over 2 decades old, you know, we always, you know, sure, of course we get disappointed in certain things in the same way we celebrate certain things, but we, you know, oftentimes, you know, we'll look at each other and we will say, wow, we get to work in this business. So while we certainly rip our hair out, we are always very, very grateful to get all of the chances that we do get. And I think we're doing okay.
No, thank God. See, here's the question, because it's like, how do you cobble together? I mean, if you're working with Disney, it's more than cobbling together. But here's the deal. I mean, there's no guarantees in musical theater. You haven't had the Broadway hit smash thing. You've had an off-Broadway show. You've had regional theater stuff. You've had stuff in children's theater. How do you not have to have day jobs with what you do?
Well, I mean, we've been fortunate enough that a lot of the children's work and a lot of the television work that we've done actually does, believe it or not, it pays. It doesn't pay, you know, hugely, or big league, but it absolutely does pay. It pays enough for us to continue doing what we're doing. And, you know, again, it's cliched, but it's the journey, it's not the destination. So we're very happy doing the writing we're doing, and I don't believe that we would continue unless we were fully certain that we would be able to achieve our goals.
Yeah. And the goal doesn't have to be a Broadway show, you know, it can be an off-Broadway. I'm not saying that Broadway, it has to be the be-all and end-all. It just seems like, you know, if you want to be the next Aarons and Flaherty, or the next whoever, so-and-so, it's sort of like, it's been 20 years, when, you know?
You ask that, of course you ask yourself that, but that's just, you know, you have to make that a part of the experience and not the whole experience. You can't, you know, in the same way that you can't ever take a success for granted, you can't be, you know, defined by your, I would never want to call them mistakes, but, you know, defined by things that didn't quite go the way you wanted to. But there are a lot of things that we can point to be, you know, proud of. I mean, there are Audra McDonald sings our work, Kristen Chenoweth sings our work, Alan Cummings sings our work. I mean, I feel like even though we don't have the Broadway moniker just yet, I still feel like we've done some things that we're very proud of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and your songs will show up in the cabaret performances of the people you just mentioned and other cabaret people. What's the song? Taylor the Latte Boy has become something of a standard of the genre in a way. In fact, our good friend of the neighborhood, Christine Lavin, putting on one of her compilation albums. I think with you guys doing it, am I right?
Oh, yes. No, Christine is amazing. She's absolutely amazing. And, no, and we also have a performance career as well. We do performance and concert work. And so, you know, we patch it all together, and it works out in the end. And save your money, everybody. Everybody who is trying to be a writer. Save your money. That helps, too.
Now, I want to ask you, you mentioned the Great American Mousicle at Goodspeed Theater, which is, that's not an American tale, it's not the Feivel Mouskowitz Jewish thing, it's a different story, yes?
Oh, yes, Julie Andrews wrote a beautiful book called The Great American Mousicle, and so we had a chance to make that into a musical with Hunter Bell and Julie directing up in Connecticut, and that's just, we had a developmental production, and so that's still in the stages, and we're looking so forward to seeing what happens next with it.
So tell us about Julie Andrews. What is she like? Is she wonderful?
She is as amazing
really wonderful.
As you would think. She really is. It's such a wild thing to have her in our lives the way that she is. And she really is so lovely. And there's really nothing like a beautiful brewed tea from Julie Andrews herself.
I can tell. Now, who else are mentors, maybe when you were back doing that musical theater shop? One of you was at Tisch also, Tisch School in the Arts, the dramatic writing program?
Yes, dramatic writing, class of 89. Oh, I just aged myself.
Oh, that's all right. The producer of this radio program was, his name is Dave, he was DWP class of 86, so he just missed
it. I just followed behind him. That's fantastic.
That's right. So who was still there? Was Janet Nypress still there at that point?
Yes. Janet was the head of the program, and it was really, I had transferred from Northwestern, and I only got 2 years in that program, but I absolutely loved it, and to have Greenwich Village as your schoolroom was really quite amazing, and I moved down the block. I'm still in the NYU hood.
Oh, wow. Well, pretty much NYU owns all of Greenwich Village now, so wherever you go in the village is NYU's hood, to be blunt. What else? Now, can you yet talk about a project that you guys mentioned somewhere that you're working for Universal Pictures on?
I can't quite talk about that one yet, but we're getting to our first reading, so we hope that by the time we do the first reading in a few months, that they'll be able to announce it soon.
Yeah.
We are very, very excited. It's a beloved project.
Okay. So, oh, is it? Are you doing the Torah?
That'll be the next one.
Not that beloved. And if you do the Torah, then you can do the sequel of the Talmud. I mean, you can have a whole line of these things playing in theme parks and everything. It's just an idea. It's just a thought. We're talking with Marcy Heisler and Zynga Goldrich here. So tell us about some of your other grown-up musical projects. Because if you're in the theater, whether you're a playwright or a director or anything, you have to have like five things in the hopper ready to go at any time. Yeah, ready to pull the trigger. So what else is in your chamber, as it were?
We have another project called Hollywood Romance. Actually, we just finished a reading this past week on it. It's an original based on a story by Jen Crittenden and Gabby Allen, who are writers for Veep. So they are amazingly funny, wonderful women, and it's a fantastically modern story. Martin's better at describing all this stuff. I'm a music person, but we're very excited about that. We're hoping to find out if we have a production soon, and so we will keep you posted on that one as well.
Okay, all right. What has been your proudest moment or achievement as musical theater writers to date?
Oh, my gosh.
And if anybody wants to date musical theater writers, what are your phone numbers? Just kidding. No, but...
I think that what you said before about sticking in the business, I have to say that I think that the action of continuing to write against all odds is probably what we're most proud of. I think when we see people like Audra McDonald sing our work in places like Lincoln Center, and I know Kristen has sung at the Met. And
I think, I think that was a pretty front moment.
Right.
I saw Kristen Chenoweth sing Taylor, the Blasé Boy, at the Met. And I was sitting there in the audience, I'm like, wow, I have a song at the Met. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you've arrived when that occurs, I think. It's, no joke. Now, Zynga, here's a question for you. And it's not dealing with the shows that you guys have written, but Zynga, you've actually been a keyboard player in the pits, in the orchestras, for various shows, funny anecdotal stories that you've noticed when you were sitting there at the keyboard and you looked up and there was an Oy Vey on the stage?
I have a funny story, actually. We were just talking about this story the other day. I was assistant conductor at Titanic, and I played in the orchestra there for quite some time. And there was one. There's a moment in the show where you're seeing all the millionaires, and they're all having dinner, and there's like a little tea cart that starts to make its way across the stage. It's completely silent on stage except for like the squeaky wheels of this tea cart. And from that moment, you can tell that the ship is starting to list.
Right.
Anyway, so from on the right side of the audience, all of a sudden this woman in the audience says, "You better get off, it's sinking." And I was like, oh, what, did she actually say that? But then from the other side of the audience, I said, "Now you ruined the surprise."
God, I love Jewish people at the theater. Nothing.
I couldn't believe they said it. That guy's response was so awesome.
That's wonderful. Yeah, and let me ask you, since you've also been in the pit for various shows, before, you know, you were there in previews, then it opened, could you tell before the reviews came out whether a show was going to be a hit or a flop?
You know, you never really know these things. I think quite often you get a good sense if people are enjoying it, but, you know, you just don't know. Not everything, you know, everybody has their own taste, so you never can tell. It's always exciting, though, when you've worked hard on something and it does well. That's very, you know, gratifying. So we're always hopeful, you know, ever hopeful.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no, but it's sort of like, you know, the man who produces this show, Dave, we've talked about him. He was a theater critic for many, many years. And so he would see shows in previews, and the audience would have a wonderful time. And then a week later, you know, the reviews came out, and then the Conoscenti came out, and suddenly, boom, the show was gone in 2 weeks. So, it was hard for him to tell, even after all those years of him in the trenches, too, in a manner of speaking.
Sure, it's very difficult to know, but I think you can only control what you can control, you know, and I mean, that's the thing. There's so much that goes into a musical. There are so many ways for it to go right and so many ways for it to go wrong.
True.
And, you know, we're very grateful for the concert work we do, and even everybody who has a show that maybe didn't go so well, you know, there's always some show that's about the songs that never made it or this or that, and you know, once you give birth to a song, it's important to sort of find a venue for it, I think, and living in New York, you really get to do that. And listen, you know, even Stephen Sondheim has had a show that didn't do so well here or there. He's still a brilliant writer, you know. He's had wonderful successes and some that were okay, you know.
Okay. Have you met him? Have you spoken to him? Have you learned? Has he ever mentored or seminared that you've been to?
No, he's so generous with his time. We have been lucky enough to sit down to tea with him, and as I said, he's so generous with young writers. Or, you know, now not as young writers.
Maybe not so young anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. But, no, I mean, he's had such a breadth of experience, and he really does share it with people. And again, it's a lot like what you say. I think it's important to realize that people who are as stellar as Sondheim, you know, have moments where things went differently, and he, you know, is great at letting, you know, young writers know what it all takes and encouraging them.
The best advice he gave to us when we sat down, you know, we were talking about a lot of stuff that was going on with the production, and we were frustrated about this or that, and he said, "Girls, the writing is all. If you put a post-it on your head, the writing is all. So don't get involved in all that other stuff. Just keep on writing.
Stare at the blank canvas like Georges Seurat and just, you know, start the dots. That's all you can do, you know?
It's very good advice, and we try to stick to that.
And by the way, we're sticking with Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich here in the neighborhood. They are the composers and songwriters and musical theater makers of shows like Dear Edwina and Junie B. Jones. The cast album is coming out on January 13th, both as downloadable and also on a hard copy disky kind of a thing. They're with us and talking a bit more about their careers and lives in musical theater. Now speaking of not being so young anymore, you guys started, as we keep saying, in the early 1990s. Did you feel, or do you even still feel, that commercial theater, musical theater, is kind of an old boys network or an old boys network that there's an extra glass ceiling for women, or you've never felt that?
Well, no, I mean, I think certainly if you look at the numbers, you know, it is somewhat of a male-dominated field. But my sister, who works in television, gave me a great piece of advice, and she just said, eyes on your own paper. You know, and I think that, you know, obviously you will change and grow in life, but I'm never going to be anything but a woman with a female partner. And I think that we can't, there's a certain level where you can't worry about that, where you just have to do your work and hope the work finds its way.
Now you say female partner, so we don't mix up things there. You guys are work partners only.
We are work partners, yes.
Now, do you each have different...
friends and colleagues.
Does anybody have family, kids, husbands, wives, girlfriends? What's the deal with on either side there?
Oh, well, I am...
Who's talking, by the way?
Marcy. I have long been... I am single and dating.
Oh, mazel. Yes.
I'm newly single, but I have two beautiful children who are actually teenagers, and my daughter just got into college. Yay!
Mazel tov, yay! What college? Where's she going?
Emerson. Beautiful Emerson.
Hey, not Ivy. You failed as a parent. You failed. I hope... is she going to be a doctor or a lawyer?
Neither.
Oh, God. Hold on. I have to rend my clothing for a moment. I've got to tear something. Hold on. Here it goes. Okay. All right. I'll wear black for a week.
I'm very proud of her, whatever she does.
So you're both single and mingling. Are you able to find heterosexual men in the theater community?
You'll have to let us know.
Yes.
I write a lot of romantic comedy lyrics for a reason.
Oh, that's fair. That's totally fair. So, do you also get to see, or do you physically go to see, the shows that are currently running on Broadway? Either because, you know, you get in because you're in a union or something, or because you have to see these things because you're in the business.
Well, we need to see these things because it's important to know what your colleagues are doing, and also because we just love theater, you know? I loved Dear Evan Hansen. That was beautiful.
Yeah,
that was
wonderful, you know?
Dear Evan, are you over the moon as so many people are about Hamilton?
I loved it. I certainly did, and I was very lucky. You know, we've known Lynn for a while and all those wonderful people who worked on it, and we used to see Lin-Manuel sing it in various concerts. He would sing snippets of it before it was at the Public or before it was on Broadway. So, you know, it's been really amazing to watch its rise, and I'm so happy for him and happy for everybody that's involved with it.
Have you seen Waitress, the Broadway?
I've not seen Waitress yet. I'm looking forward to that.
And what about Bronx Tale?
Bronx Tale, I have not
just opened, so I still have a couple things on my list. So.
Smells like pie. Didn't they do something where they pipe in a pie smell?
Nice.
Something like that.
That wouldn't be bad.
No, but Waitress and Bronx Tale are on my to-see list, and I'm looking forward to seeing them.
And, have you seen also one that would sort of remind me of the kind of things almost that you guys do, In Transit, the acapella that just opened?
Oh, I have to see that this week. So yeah. I'm going to see that. You know what I did see that I really enjoyed?
It's
actually off Broadway, but David Yazbek's piece, The Bang.
Oh, The Bang's Visit. Well, that's going to come to Broadway, I'm sure, next Saturday in the fall.
It was a beautiful piece. I really enjoyed it very much.
And it's about Jews and Arabs, too, but mostly Jews, yes.
Right. It's a beautiful storytelling, and the music was so evocative and lovely. I just loved it.
Oh, good. Now, getting back to a little bit of personal stuff, because when we were talking about Junie B. Jones and the things that she goes through in school, one of the things in Marcy's biography there is that, you know, like all children, you had issues to cope with and deal with. But why were you wearing an eye patch at some point?
Oh, well, you know, we were in a shopping center in Skokie, Illinois, when I was 3 years old, and my mom looked at me and said, you look a little cross-eyed. So that was that was true. And I went to the eye doctor, and my doctor gave me a patch for my lazy eye. And that is the whole story.
Now, how does that help?
How did it help? I think it makes
strengthens the weak eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you took the iPad off?
It's like a pirate, and it gives you a great conversation piece for a birthday party.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. So you work through, because for, you know, kids are going to be like, what the hell is that? They'll make fun. But then you turn it around and make that, you know,
right.
a badge of honor, as it
it's
were.
It's funny. I never really thought that much about it, because I wasn't really teased about the eye patch that much. I think, a lot of people had headgear and crazy things, and you know, you just sort of take it in stride.
Well, nowadays, kids, they spray their hair, they shave their head, they have tattoos and nose rings and piercings, and, you know.
Right.
Now, anything goes. But back then, not so much, you know. I mean, I had a hangnail, and then they isolated me for a week.
Oh, well, I think I had a couple friends with eye patches, too, so we had a little gang.
Now, let me ask, what are your all-time favorite musicals?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's hard to choose, but I'll give a few of them, because
sure.
I love Sunday in the Park with George.
Of course.
Love Gypsy. I love My Fair Lady. I love Guys and Dolls. I love Chorus Line. I think Chorus Line was very pivotal in me choosing to be a lyricist. I think that I was just completely fascinated by people telling their stories in that way. Everything Zena mentioned, West Side Story,
I would say. That's a good one, too.
That's a good one, too. Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd, I love Sweeney Todd.
We're very classic in nature. We like the oldies.
Well, it must have been, wait, but one thing I do want to pick up on is that Marcy was just saying that you loved Chorus Line so much. So was, maybe your proudest moment was winning that Edward Claiborne Award.
He
was the guy, you know.
I was very, to have that kind of a link to him was really amazing. I think that he especially knew how hard it is to be a lyricist. I think that composers oftentimes can get jobs in music, and lyric writing is a little trickier. And I think that the award he set up was so generous, and it really bought me some time. You know, it really, you know, half the problem is just finding time to write, because it's very rare to not have a day job. And that kind of a grant really buys you time to write. And it's not like, you know, people think we don't have day jobs. What really it is that we have, you know, 20 day jobs.
Right.
You know, there's
But yes,
I was very excited to be the recipient of that award.
And the day jobs at least are connected to what you do. I mean, you're not, you know, stacking shoes in Payless. I mean, it's different.
Well, that's true.
When we first started out, we had, you know, I was working at Estee Lauder in their corporate offices, and I moved from department to department, because it's kind of like temping, but within the same company. So I was always in the same place, but just, and I could come back, I could go work for a while and then come back and work again, and that was a really great thing. And, of course, a discount on cosmetics. So.
Yeah. And I also think that sometimes when you do have a day job, those offices you work in become truly your supportive family and provide audiences for your concerts and Xeroxing and all kinds
of things. Now, thank God for Xerox machines.
I think that offices that have a lot of theater workers in them tend to become little theater companies on their own.
Well, we've been talking with Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich, the delightful and very, very talented musical theater writers. Please go get the cast album from Junie B. Jones. And also, since you know, this radio show streams everywhere, and also we put the shows in the archives, is one of your musicals, either for adults or children, being done anywhere in the next couple of weeks that people could go see, not just New Long Island or Colorado, but anywhere in the U.S.?
You can check the MTI shows site for our licensed musicals. There actually are some of our musicals that are going all around. I don't exactly know where they are, but they are on MTI. And if you are in the New York area, we are doing two shows at 54 Below, which is under the Studio 54 Broadway Theater. And that is January 25th at 7, and also February 2nd at 7. You'll hear some sneak peeks from stuff we're working on.
Ooh, excellent, excellent. So, last question for these delightful Jewesses that we have been talking with here. If you controlled Broadway, rather than the Schuberts and the Drew Jamsons and the Needle, if it was Heisler and Goldrich running Broadway, to Hashem's ears, you're right. How would you change it? How would you solve some of the problems that Broadway has? It doesn't have financial problems, obviously, but there's artistic and creative roadblocks, and there are issues. How would you remake Broadway in your own images?
Well, I think half the fun of Broadway is having a bunch of different perspectives and artists. So what I would really do on a very practical level is if I had if I won the lottery, I would buy 20 more theaters.
I mean, I the same thing. That's so funny. More theaters.
More theaters and more opportunities to develop, because just like anything else, the more you can fall on your face, the more you can write the wrong song as opposed to writing the right song, the more you have safe spaces for development, and the more art you get to put out. And I think that just having the venues to develop and to perform on that level would be amazing. I hope it happens. I entreat all real estate people out there.
Let me ask you, I actually have a corollary question. It just occurred to me, because the opposite, well, I don't know if it's the opposite, but look what's happening in Los Angeles in the 99-seat theater situation. Where would you guys stand on that, of being able to do shows without having to pay anybody, but at least to give people experience, or people are working, they should be paid?
Well, I think at a very basic level, you need to pay people so they can do their best work. But I also know that, you know, working on developmental pieces, there's not usually a lot of budget. So I think there's got to be some sort of happy medium in between the two of those things. I agree. I'm thrilled with the dialogue that's taking place. I think it's important. I think that actors are completely instrumental to development. I understand the producer issues that are involved, but absolutely more dialogue needs to happen. And I do believe everybody's needs need to be taken into account.
Well, taking into account the dialogue that we have had with Marcy Heisler and Zena Goldrich, I give them 4 stars in my review of their appearance here.
Thank you.
In Dave's Gone
By. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Rabbi.
What a delight. Thank you so much. Shalom.